Hello and welcome to QSO, It's All About Ham Radio. This week, our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK. He's with PracticalPodcaster.com. Coming up right here on QSO.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Our guest today is Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK. And Jerry is a amateur radio podcaster, and we're gonna talk all about how you doing today, sir.
I'm doing fine, Ted. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, you know, I'll tell you. One of the things that really caught my eye, the fact is that we're moving into a different period of time as far as ham radio is concerned, and much like the old days, when folks were upset because single sideband was coming in and the AMers were really, you know, the new single sideband technology and the AM technology got sideways with each other. And this went on, they referred to sideband as slop bucket, I think it was, and, you know, back and forth. You know, it was just one of those kind of things. And, you know, I hear things like, I hear people say, well, you know, EchoLink is not really ham radio, you know. And then I heard Chris Matthew, and you're a good friend of Chris, I assume, from what I can gather, N7ICE. Yeah. He comes up with 73s.org, and the next thing you know, we have got, which is a ham radio Facebook, is basically what it amounts to, which is something that's really cool, something really needed. And he gets on. He puts a post up on eHam, and then these guys get into a long discussion and disagreement over the fact that 73 is the proper way to say this. Okay, it's 73.
Right.
And so his thing is 73s. Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been in it a long time, and I can honestly say that most of the QSOs that I hear on the air at the end, somebody will say, well, 73s. I mean, you hear that. I mean, that's the way it is. Okay. I mean, they finally put ain't in the dictionary, you know. I mean, so I guess how much are we going to ruffle feathers over things like this? In other words, we got a growth situation to worry about in ham radio. We need more hams. We need some younger people on the air, and I'm told the numbers are healthy. I'm told that we're about 800,000 strong across the United States, but still, in all, when you get right down to it, the ARRL could stand more members. You know, I mean, they really could. It's a good organization. People ought to join. They ought to be part of it. But the problem is that we need younger members. We need we need new blood in the hobby right now. I really believe that. I don't think the hobby is in any trouble, but it very well could get in trouble. And anyhow, why am I running my mouth? Well, I you know I, here comes podcasting. Now, you know, you can't argue with 173 million iPods. You just can't argue with that. There's 173 million of these things out there. And they're all connected up to iTunes, and there's Zunes. I don't know how many Zunes. Do you have any idea how many Zunes Microsoft has put out so far?
I would guess tons. I mean, just bunches. And there's all sorts of MP3 players. There's, like you've already mentioned, there's the iPod, various flavors of that. There's the Zunes. There's, you know, pretty much every other electronic manufacturer is making an MP3 type audio player. And, you know, the good news is if you don't own an MP3 player, don't worry about it. You can still listen to my podcast. You can still listen to any podcast just over your computer.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, I mean, I think most folks would really agree with this. Other than talk radio, regular broadcast radio, as far as music and stuff is concerned, has gotten pretty boring. I mean, it's, you know, you listen in the car in the morning, they've got some comedy routine on, two or three guys, they're all laughing, you can't figure out what they're even laughing about. But it's you know, broadcast radio is really not in great shape right now. And I think that's one of the things that the podcasting is really starting to worry the broadcast industry, because you can plug the MP3 device in to your computer, and by means of RSS feeds and all that, it just, you know, it's like a vacuum cleaner. It goes in and just sucks all that stuff out of your computer. And you get in your car and plug it into the headphones, or plug it into the input of your car radio, or a lot of them have the little FM transmitters, and you just go on down the road and you listen. And if it's go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, the whole beauty about podcasting is that it is very much portable media. One of the reasons why I started my podcast, the Practical Amateur Radio Podcast, was to sort of serve as a portable Elmer session, so that new hams or those that were just wanting to start out in the hobby would have a way to take the content, put it on their MP3 player, or, you know, download it to their laptop, burn it onto a CD, you know, I don't care. Whatever method works for them, take that information and listen to it in their commute to work, in the car, on the bus, on a plane, walking down the street, whatever, to try to get the information out there to those, like I said, that are just starting out in the hobby, or those that want to participate in the hobby, but they don't have any clue as to how to get started.
Well, you know, this is a whole different dimension when it comes to Elmering, because like you said, you know, you've got, I mean, there's a lot of study books, a lot of study guides and different things you can get and whatnot, but this is the kind of thing you can listen to on your lunch hour. I mean, you can get a little MP3 player. What, I mean, I haven't priced them. I own a Zune, but I'm not endorsing Microsoft, because friends of mine have iPods, you know, but I just so happened to get the Zune, you know, for some reason. But there's all kinds of small ones, even little ones that are very inexpensive. What can you pick up an MP3 player for now? I mean, do you have any idea? Have you priced with the, you know, if you walked into a Walmart, what can you get a 1 gig or a 2 gig little bitty tiny player for? Do you have any idea?
I would, you know, gander to guess that you can find them from, you know, price ranges from as low as $25, $30 up to, you know.
We'll be back with our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com.
Well, I would believe that you could pick up a relatively inexpensive MP3 player from Walmart, Radio Shack, Best Buy, what have you, for anywhere from, you know, I'd say the low side, relatively small capacity in the $25 to $35, $40 range, on up to a couple of hundred dollars if you wanted to go with something as fancy as, say, an iPhone or an iPod Touch. You know, the price point there is a couple of hundred dollars.
Well, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that it's very affordable within the reach of just about anybody. And it is a little inconvenient sometimes to play these things on a computer because you're there at the house, but or at work, wherever you're at, sometimes folks where they're working won't allow them, you know, to have, play things on a computer, but some places will. But this is so convenient because, first off, you don't need a ton of capacity to play back podcasts. In other words, you can, I don't know how many podcasts you can fit within a gig, but it's a lot of stuff, you know. And you can listen on your way to work. You can listen on your way home from work. You can listen at lunch. And then the other thing is exercise. There's a lot of people that really like to walk, go out and walk, or they like to go to the gym and work out. And a lot of times that time, depending on what kind of person you are, that can get a little boring and a little, how do I want to say it, a little over routine-ish, you know. And so having having a podcast to listen to while you're doing that is a godsend. You know, it really helps you, you know, that kind of distracts you. You tend to exercise better and whatnot. Now, you've got three different podcasts that you're putting out. One is called, The Practical Podcaster. Tell us about Practical Podcast. Or Practical...
My entire podcasting project is called The Practical Podcaster. And in January, I started a practical technology podcast and a practical computer podcast. But my passion as far as podcasting goes really does fall into the area of amateur radio. That's the podcast that gets the most attention as far as my schedule and everything goes. To date, I have released 15 episodes of that podcast. I started back in May of 2008. And like I said, it's what gets the most attention.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something, and I don't want my fellow hams to get upset with me, but a lot of us guys, especially fellows that, you know, are over the 50 mark, a lot of us need a little IT training. You know, I thought about this the other day, and I mentioned this to Chris when we were on talking about 73s. I said, you know, it used to be when I was younger, I'd run into a problem and I could get on the air. You know, I could just you know, you can almost pick a frequency, especially at night. 75 meters would be, you know, running pretty good. And you could just pick a frequency and jump on and say, you know, I got a problem with this, you know. And usually somebody would step up to the mic and say, okay, Ted, here's what you need to do. You know, and it would be some guy that knew a whole lot more about what I was trying to do than I did. But with all the technology we're dealing with now, we need training. We need training, you know. And I told Chris, and I know this boy, this is really going to make a lot of people happy. When the guy starts screaming that if you don't know CW, you don't belong on ham radio, then I'm going to come back and say, yes, and if you can't define what a subnet mask is, then you don't belong on ham radio either. In other words, there's two sides to this coin, you know, and where we have to move forward, or we'd still be running spark gap transmitters. And the marriage between IT and ham radio is phenomenal, and what can be done and what you can accomplish with it. But there's also a downside to it, and that is, for the most part, I mean, you open up the lid on one of these new transceivers, and it's like looking inside of a brand new automobile. You just wonder where all those wires and hoses go, you know?
Right.
So for you to put out a computer training type podcast or something about computers, in other words, the regular exposure of a particular subject on a regular basis begins to bring the person up to speed. You know, they know, maybe not, they listen to the first podcast and you may be way over their head. But if they continue to listen for a period of time, they're going to start picking up on this stuff. And there's no reason to be intimidated by it. And this is the thing, I guess, my message to the rest of our constituents, because here's a guy like Jerry Taylor putting out a podcast on computers. Download it. Listen to it. Live with it for, you know, months or whatever. You know, make it a part of your routine. And this is another form of Elmering. This is almost, I want to call this, like, you know, this could be what I would term is reverse Elmering. In other words, we got younger people that are computer savvy bringing the older guys up to date. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it ought to be. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you make that comparison, because my philosophy about an Elmer is, you know, nowhere in my understanding of what the term Elmer is and who fits into that category is it specified that the person has to be a certain age and has been in the hobby for, you know, a such and such amount of time. I think that the definition of an Elmer is, if you learn something and you understand what you've just learned, and if you're willing to share that information with someone else who does not know about that information, you have just Elmered someone. So it could be something as basic as, you know, how to configure a handheld transceiver to be able to pair up with a local repeater, inputting the correct frequency, the PL tones, etc. If you understand how to do that, you could have just got your license last week. But you understand how to do that, and you're sharing that information with someone else. And that's one of the things that I ask all of my listeners within the Practical Amateur Radio podcast to do, is to, you know, listen to my podcast and then share that information with others. You know, sort of a tagline that I use is creating Elmers one podcast at a time. I think that's what we're doing. And I think a lot of people are doing that. I mean, there is a lot of very successful amateur radio content-focused podcasts that are out there. Some are more technical than others. I tend to focus my podcast on, like I said, the beginning amateur or someone who has heard about the hobby that would like to participate, that would like to join the ranks. There's podcasts like Solder Smoke, Resonant Frequency. You know, these guys take on a particular subject and they really sort of peel back the layers and they help the listeners understand. And so I think it's just another mechanism for the information that we know and what we enjoy about the hobby. It's just another mechanism for us to share the information.
We'll be back with our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK. with practicalpodcaster.com right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSL. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK. With practicalpodcaster.com. I guess the thing of it is that is so cool that there is such a cross section of things here that you can choose from. And when you're talking about Elmering, now I don't believe age is a barrier. However, I think that in our minds, most of us that have been Elmered, it's usually been an older ham, somebody that's been in it a number of years, mm-hmm. and is wanting to pass the hobby along. In other words, this has been the way it was, you know, in my life. But when I was talking about reverse Elmering, I'm thinking that, you know, this, we're now getting into an age of technology where it can work both ways, and age really has absolutely nothing to do with it. I mean, a lot of the Elmers today that are very, very good are younger people, and you have folks that are, I guess I want to say, that are moved to share amateur radio with other people. Now, my older son, David, who is a chief engineer for Trevecca Nazarene University here, he can't get enough of sharing ham radio. I mean, he tells everybody about it. He puts his call sign over everything. He's put extra antennas on his car that are not even hooked up, just because they're conversation pieces. He pulls into a parking lot somewhere and says, "What is all that?" And he gets into a car. "You should become a ham," you know. So I totally agree with you there, you know. And I think that but I do think the computer training is something that we're just really drastically in need of. And I hear guys talking on HF, you know, and you can tell they'll have a problem with a sound card or with a video card, and you can tell a lot of these guys are a really level entry, or entry level, I should say. They're right at the very basics in the beginning of computer and IT. And at that level, they're never going to be able to enjoy everything that's out there, or even scratch the surface on some of the really cool stuff. And I think intimidation has a lot to do with it. Folks are intimidated. Something they don't know. It's you know, and hams have been inquisitive, you know. I mean, that's something we've always been. They want to know things, and they're willing to learn things. And but there does seem to be a little bit of a breakdown when it comes into the IT end of it and accepting the newer technology. And I guess what Chris went through was a good example. But what's really kind of funny is he said after all the discussion and the debate over 73 or 73s, he wound up getting about 200 new members after all of that. So, you know, there's a, I guess there's an upside to it. Now, you do the computer. Tell me a little bit about this computer podcast you're doing about computers. What do you cover in that, and what's some of the subject area that you cover and do?
Well, it's just really starting to, you know, it's still in, it's still very much in its infancy, both the computer and the technology. But, you know, kind of going back to the title of it, Practical, that's really where the focus is going to be. It's going to be the things that you need to know. And there's a lot of really good podcasters out there that are talking about computers, Leo Laporte and some of the other folks. And I don't want to compete with those individuals. They're talking about, you know, things at such a high level. I'm going to break things down and try to help the listener, regardless of whether they're in the amateur radio hobby or just, you know, going out and trying to take on the task of buying their very first computer, helping them to understand what it is that they need to do and look for.
Well, you know, and I'll tell you, there's a need for that. And I'll give you an example with doing the recording that I do. I picked up a digital flash recorder. I don't know if you've seen these things. The one I picked up, it operates supposedly now. It's an external sound card. You plug it in, USB. It functions as a sound card with two XLR inputs on it, so you can put two broadcast mics on it and record onto a notebook. It also will record directly to the flash card, which is inside of it. It's quite an amazing device. I mean, the two built-in mics are not bad. They're not equivalent to a Heil PR30, but they're they're pretty good, the little mics, you know. And so I have a brand new Dell notebook, and I plug this thing into the Dell notebook, and it'll only record mono. It doesn't matter what I do. I mean, it's stereo coming out of the sound card. I mean, inside this thing, it's stereo. But in the when you plug it into the Dell, in any of the software I use, you know, you see right and left channel, but they're the same. Now, obviously, there's something I don't know here, okay? But the question is where do you go to ask? Who would know? You know, where do you go to get that information? And I can see with Echolink and some of the automatic modes that we're using are so dependent upon computers, where there's going to be glitches these guys are going to run into. And as long as there's a computer, there's an available glitch. So as long as there's Windows, there's a potential problem. And
very well said.
Yeah. So anyhow, but it's so nice if you can hang around a bunch of guys somewhere that know a little bit about this, that can go a little bit below the surface and can help out. And it's also good to be able to have, as you say, the word practical, you know, a practical training that you can learn at your own pace, listen at your own pace, and pick up on these things, because that's the only way we're going to get there. We're not going to, you know, and I love books, but I'm pretty dense, and for some reason I tend to pick up more information off a human voice than I do reading a book. I mean, books are fine, and I've studied all my life, but now I just thank the Lord. Now we have audio, we have podcasting, we have all these things like this for people like myself that are just more dense than normal. You know, it takes a little bit more to get me over the edge. So you cover practical areas. You've got your practical the podcast for ham radio, and now there's three altogether. Why don't you go ahead and just list them again for me here, if you would.
Okay, there's the Practical Computer Podcast, the Practical Technology Podcast, and actually, I haven't decided if those two are going to eventually just kind of fold into each other, because I wanted to try to keep things separated, but I think that is such a fine line between those two subjects that those two podcasts could actually fold into each other. And then the third one, like I said, the one that gets the most of my attention is the Practical Amateur Radio Podcast.
Well, now tell me, what subjects have you covered so far? If we went back to podcast number one and started listening consecutively down the line. Give me a little tour guide here. Be the tour guide. Give me a tour of what's out there on your site.
Sure. Well, with episode number one, it was really just an introduction of myself, who I am, and sort of a little bit of a history behind how I got into the hobby. I got into the hobby late, although I've known about ham radio since I was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. My uncle celebrated his 50th year as a licensed amateur last year. I remember family vacations and holidays and such that I would spend with him, where I would see him working in his ham station. And, you know, growing up in the late 70s, mid 80s, being a teenager, I had a lot of different focuses going on, a lot of different irons in the fire, so to speak. And that was in the stage before, you know, they did away with the CW requirements. And it was just a struggle for me to try to manage my time wisely. It was football, and then it was trying to learn Morse, and then it was basketball, and then I would go back and try to learn Morse again, but I would have to start over from the very beginning. So
we'll be back with our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com.
That's really what episode one is about, is just the kind of the history of myself. And then I finally got my life together and got focused and everything in 2007, got licensed as a technician class operator in August of 2007, and then upgraded to general in 2008, and then I'm working on my extra for this year. Now, episode two, the first of a multi-part feature episode, and I kind of started with defining in practical terms exactly what amateur radio is. We discussed the Amateur's Code, which was written by W9EEA back in 1928. And then we picked up with episode three, and we kind of started talking about how to prepare for the amateur radio examination. We talked about various methods, methods that I had used myself, including self-study method or classroom method, et cetera. And then in episode five, we move into how to find a testing location, a VE session for your amateur examination, what to bring with you, et cetera. In episode six, we start talking about the subject that most every brand new ham is going to have hundreds, if not thousands, of questions about, and that's around how and what do I purchase as far as my first radio is concerned. And then later on in episode seven, we start talking about other elements to the entire ham experience, like, for instance, how to put together your ham shack. We talk about practical information about antennas that you need to know. In episode number eight, we discussed mic fright and some of the challenges that a brand new ham radio operator will need to overcome so that they can enjoy the hobby, because I certainly remember my first QSO. It was on one of our local 2-meter repeaters here in the Denver, Colorado area. And I was a little nervous that first time. I wanted to make sure that I did everything correctly. I said the right things. I mean, you know, God forbid that you make a mistake and you get somebody that just really lays into you, and then you start second guessing why you got into the hobby in the first place.
You want to make sure that you say 73 and not 73s. You know?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And so I shared with the listeners a repeater etiquette guide that I had found from another individual, shared that information with them. In episode nine, we start talking about something again that I had to sort of go through. And I don't know. I mean, I suppose you could look at my podcast, especially the first, 10 or 12 episodes, as almost being a diary because of some of the things that I went through. Because episode 9, we started talking about antennas for restricted neighborhoods. I live in a very tightly controlled HOA type neighborhood, and pretty much any type of antenna other than a satellite antenna is forbidden. But, you know, I've got a Hustler 6BTV vertical that is very well disguised, and nobody really knows it's there. Nobody's complained. And so we share some of these ideas with them. Moving into episode 10, we start talking about assembling an amateur's first ham shack. We talk about, you know, power, grounding, lighting, all of this kind of information that they need to know. And then episode 12 was really when I started developing the idea behind the computer podcast, because in episode 12 we discussed exactly what are the requirements for a computer in the ham shack. And one of, maybe this is a misconception, that, you know, in order to have a computer in the ham shack, you have to go out and buy the latest, greatest, you know, Dell or HP or whatever the case may be. And that's absolutely not the case. Most computers in the ham shack, as far as logging, as far as rig control, as far as the digital modes, you can actually get by with computers that, you know, may just be sitting in the corner of the basement that are 4 or 5 years old. So it's not like it's going to be a great expense to integrate a computer into the ham shack. And then episode 13, we actually discussed the QSL process. And this is something that is sort of near and dear to me, because I remember as a kid being fascinated with all the QSL cards that that my uncle had hanging in his ham shack. And I said to myself that if I ever had the opportunity to become a ham radio operator, that would be something I wanted to collect. And so we talked about the QSL process, and then I talked a little bit about the electronic QSL processes, and those will be subjects that I will touch on again, both EQSL and Logbook of the World, at a podcast sometime in 2009. And then my last podcast, episode 15, which came out on February the 14th, I release one podcast a month, deals with emergency communications, and it's really going to be the first of a multi-part series of podcasts that I will do on the subject of MCOM. And then each of my podcasts, I kind of break it down into different segments. The first segment will be whatever meat and potatoes that we're going to discuss for that particular day. So it would start out with emergency communications, for instance, with episode 15. And then we have I kicked off a brand new segment last month with a segment that I titled Time Machine, and I go back and pull out an old QST or a CQ magazine and kind of hit some of the articles and talk about some of the latest and greatest technology that may have debuted that particular year. And in episode 15, we talked about January 1991. And then each episode, I also introduce what I call our fellow amateur segment, and it's really a segment to showcase all of the other amateurs that are going above and beyond in the hobby to, you know, whether it be helping Elmer, other hams, or if they have created something like, for instance, I featured Chris Matthew back in the September or October time frame to showcase his 73s.org website. And
we'll be back with our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com right after this. If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com.
In February, I talked about Heather, KB9ZLB, and she is the president of Chick Factor International. The club call sign is W9YL, and they're really, this organization is about recognizing the women of amateur radio, and it's a very cool group. They have some special events, and I would certainly recommend your listeners to check that out, especially for the women amateurs that are out there. And then generally I wrap things up with a ham adventure segment, and it's mostly about stuff that I'm doing, talking about what I've experienced new in the hobby or any sort of travels or trials and tribulations that I've experienced in the hobby. And it's a lot of fun for me to put this together. I've learned a lot I do try to keep the timing down to about 30 minutes or so, kind of the average commute time. I figure that, you know, my goal would be if someone is taking advantage of listening to this podcast during their lunch hour, during their commute to and from work or what have you, that it's going to be in a short enough time frame that they can do that in one listening and get that information.
Well, that's very good. Very good. You know, I was going to ask you, though, I'm going to depart from your timeline here just for a second. And do you recall what equipment that your uncle had? Can you go back and remember the pieces and the different pieces of equipment that he used back during the time that you were kind of getting acclimated into amateur radio?
Well, I know that he had a lot of Heathkit equipment, and there's a photograph, and I'll send it to you. And it's a photo taken of me, and I'm 6 years old, I guess. And the only embarrassing thing is that I'm wearing a pair of shorts and some cowboy boots. But I grew up in Texas, and that's my excuse for that photograph. But I'm sitting at my uncle's ham shack, and I remember that. I remember that photograph, and I actually didn't actually get my hands on the photograph until this last Christmas. We were down celebrating Christmas with my family, and of course my uncle was there. And in one of my grandmother's photo albums, she had this photograph. And even though I remember, you know, I remember that day and when the photograph was taken, I asked her if I could bring that back to Colorado so I could scan it and make a digital image for that for my website.
We'll be back with our guest Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK. With practicalpodcaster.com right after this.
Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation. And it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly, not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body, the supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now, Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, They don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous. Because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the veterans formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take metabolic or veterans formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with practicalpodcaster.com.
But mainly he had a lot of Heathkit equipment that he had built himself. And, you know, to this day, my uncle, his call sign is K5SOR. He was licensed, like I said, 50 years ago this last fall, and his ham shack looks a lot like it did when I remember it as a kid. He's got some solid state equipment, but it's all packed away. He's got the old tube radios, the old boat anchors out there, and that's what he loves to do. And I've sort of hinted with him. Because when I was down for Christmas, I told him, I said, look, I will build you a computer. That's what I do in my day job. I work in the IT field. I said, I'll build you a computer. I will help you get the sound card interface set up. I'll help you introduce yourself to PSK31 or RIDI or whatever you want to do. And he's like, no, you know, I don't want a computer in the ham shack. So I still have a little bit of work to do with that respect. And I think it's going to be a personal goal of mine to try to convince him to take a look at some of those other modes, because they're so much fun. But this is also a guy who doesn't even have a microphone in his ham shack.
All I was going to say, he could probably copy 20 to 30 words a minute in his head, more than likely.
Exactly. But one of the neatest things that I've had, that I've experienced in a long, long time, and like I said, I've been wanting to do this since I was a teenager. Well, like I said, I got licensed in 2007. It was in August, obviously, well after field day. Well, last summer in 2008 for field day, I went down to Texas. I left the nice, cool, dry climate of Colorado and went down and traveled with him to his childhood home of Cleveland, Texas. And we participated in field day with some of his childhood friends, and all these guys have been licensed anywhere from, 45 to 50, 52 years, and celebrated a field day with him, being able to set at the station, and of course I was working sideband, and he was logging for me, and that was just a fantastic opportunity, and almost kind of a dream come true, even though it was, 90 degrees with 80% humidity. It was a lot of fun, and I have a feeling I'm going to go back there again this summer.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's fantastic. You know, this hobby is only as strong as the fraternity is strong. At least that's how I believe. And I think that the fraternal aspects of ham radio are the thing that sets it apart from any, because it's a highly technical hobby. It's a pioneering hobby, and yet it is probably one of the most, and has been one of the most fraternal hobbies that I think I've seen. Or I mean, you don't find this in stamp collecting. It just isn't
exactly
there, you know. But you know, now you were talking about, and I think one of the things that really holds people back, and that is, I'm going to attack this now. You know, kind of like the fear of the unknown, which you don't know. And a lot of folks they may attend a local ham radio club, and they should, and they see the books and they see all these things, but you know, there's this learning curve to get over, and even the most basic, simple things. You were talking about mic fright, the QSL process. There's guys that are afraid of these things because they don't know what they are. And if you ask a question, sometimes folks feel like they're going to appear to be dumb, you know. So I don't want people to know what I don't know, you know. So this practical ham radio type podcast that you're doing, and all these subjects you're covering, and a lot of it, you're talking about personal experience. There's probably a whole lot of guys out there that would love to pass along their particular personal experience, but maybe they're not articulate. You know, they just folks that can't really communicate all that well. They can do other things real good, you know, but communication, talking is something that they can't. So you're blessed with both sides. You've had the practical experience, and then you can also talk about it and pass it along. And that is of so much value, because even when you're talking about something like the QSL process, especially with younger guys that are coming on board, the senior ham department tends to move along pretty quick, you know, assuming that you should know this and you should know that. In a lot of cases, you don't. For example, I remember, oh, man, collecting QSL cards with a novice license. I mean, that's... I mean, you couldn't wait to get back, you know, get back to the ham rig and work a few more, and you go out and check the mailbox every day, you know, and now I notice that there's a lot of electronic QSLing going on, people sending QSL cards by email, you know, which is kind of cool. You can print them out and, you know, clip them out with the scissors and put them in the little holders if you want to hang them on the wall. But this is so important, I think, and I think that people can gain so much, especially when they can listen in their own time frame, so that, and that's one of the things we run into here with QSO is we're on at a specific time on shortwave, and even though we're running on multiple stations, in the time frame is always a problem because there's people that just can't listen during a specific time period. So the convenience of a podcast is really quite an incredible piece of technology, and what you're doing is good because you're able to bring these people knowledge and information at a pace that they can handle, you know, that they can listen to. And sometimes even the learning materials that we get, the CDs and the books and stuff, they may move along a little bit too rapidly. I've been told that there's a much higher success rate with people passing a particular level of license if they go through a class with a bunch of other guys in it and cover the material. And but the time factor. I mean, some people can't attend these classes, and some people just can't do it. So the podcast is just totally beautiful. It's a good thing. So you're featuring some other people. You're putting some hams in the spotlight, which is a good thing, because this is a discovery process that a lot of folks wouldn't know about these folks. I had the privilege when I was younger, and I don't want to tell this story too many times and then get people, you know, bored with it. But I was, I don't know how old I was. I was probably 10, 11 years old, maybe. I was real interested in shortwave radio and whatnot. And my aunt had a fella in his, or her church, I should say, that attended her church. It was a couple. And she knew he was into ham radio. And she'd been over and visited with the people. And she knew he had this big setup in the basement. And to show you what I'm talking about, I was about 10 years old, and I went over to visit this guy. I'd never seen ham radio operate before. And I was actually going to see somebody talk on one of these things, you know. I mean, I looked at the Radio Shack, Heathkit, Lafayette Radio, and Olson catalogs, you know. I've seen all the equipment that you could think of. And, you know, looked in the handbook and seen, you know, Hallicrafter's equipment and all kinds of things. So this fellow's name was Nelson Cosby. He lived in Dearborn, Michigan. He's still there, matter of fact. We went back and did an interview with him this last year. It was really interesting. But I remember that exposure being taken down into the basement. It was like going into the Holy of Holies, you know. It was kind of almost like the stories you hear about the CERN particle accelerator in Switzerland, you know. But I remember going down and him having, you know, a Heathkit Marauder for a single sideband transmitter. He had an SX-101 Hallicrafter's receiver. and a homebrew linear amplifier that was very neatly built into a bookcase. And I remember when he first turned it on, he had this big light bulb that would come on and take up the current inrush, you know, going into the thing. Of course, I didn't know what that was. I just said it was a bright light that came on all of a sudden. And he had a 20-meter beam up, and his first contact from Dearborn, Michigan, was somebody in Denver, Colorado. And it just blew me away. You know, I was gone. From that point on, there was they had already injected me with the virus, and at that point, it was, you know, the thing was going to be out of control. So, you know, when you're talking about growing up, you know, with your uncle and seeing all this Heathkit gear and all that kind of thing, and a picture of you at age six or so sitting, you know, in his shack, these things are so valuable, and these are things we need to be thinking about in terms of young people today. I mean, it's, well, let's get a couple of six-year-old kids into our ham shack and make some contacts and let them. Because you really don't know what kind of seed you're planting. You don't know what kind of an Einstein later on is going to come out of this, you know. And ham radio is a perfect area with a lot of fertilizer on the ground for a young mind to develop. We'll be back with our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com right after this. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up? Or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is Tux-Support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-Support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com. And I think amongst the young folks, the podcasting you're doing ought to be really, it's just a very, very valuable thing, especially when you cover subjects that they wouldn't have any way of finding out about in that kind of detail. So now, let me ask you this. You say you finally got your life in order and got your ham license. What has been your favorite mode of operation at this point? What do you find yourself migrating to?
Very good question. And I would say that my number one favorite mode, and the one that I will pretty much go to almost each and every time that I get the opportunity to take the short walk down the stairs into my basement ham shack, would be PSK. And one of the reasons for that, and I suppose that all of the, you know, the guys that are very true to CW, you know, will say that you don't need a lot of antenna, you don't need a lot of power, et cetera, to be able to operate that. And because I live in such a tightly restricted neighborhood, and I'm getting by with a Hustler vertical, but it's not as efficient as it could be. I can't get radials 360 degrees around the thing. It's kind of tucked in to my backyard. It's too close to the house, but there's nothing I can do about it. PSK 31 allows me, and I've worked some really cool DX even at this stage of the solar cycle. One of my furthest contacts was actually into Asiatic Russia, running 30 watts PSK 31. So that's the mode that I go to. That's the one that I enjoy the most, and it's sort of the marriage of a couple of my favorite things, which obviously is ham radio, which I've wanted to do for a very long time, but also the computer aspect of it as well.
And for those that are listening that have never done anything, I've never done PSK 31, never done it. It's never been something that I've migrated to. It has nothing to do with the fact that I might not go crazy next week and start getting into all kinds of data modes. You know how we are. We go through these cycles, you know, where we get into something real, real heavy. But start is a primer for those fellows that are out there and girls that are out there, gals, ladies, that have never done it, don't know anything about it. Just start right from the beginning. And give us a little rundown about what a person needs to do to get into it and how it operates. This would be a real interesting thing to do.
Okay, well, to have the most fun, in my opinion, with PSK 31 especially, is you're going to need to upgrade to general class, because with the solar cycle being what it is, I was licensed in August of 2007 and upgraded in January of 2008. So from August to January, I tried very, very hard to work PSK on 10 meters, but it just wasn't there. So definitely, if you're a technician class operator and you want to get into the digital modes, you're going to need to upgrade to general class or better, so that way you have those operating privileges. And then the second thing is, obviously, you're going to need an HF rig. You're going to need a computer, and you're going to need a sound card interface to kind of tie the things together. And of course, you're going to need some very good software. And one software suite that I recommend over pretty much anything else that's out there, it's kind of a one thing does all, and it's very cheap, and us hams, we like that. Ham Radio Deluxe. Ham Radio Deluxe. If you Google that, you'll find it, and it's a very extensive software collection. It'll do your basic rig control, which works with pretty much every transceiver that's out there. Works with my Yaesu 857, just pretty much plug and play. It also has electronic logbook functionality, which comes in handy when you want to then upload your logs to either EQSL or Logbook of the World. And then the other components of that are that they've developed in some digital software apps, which would be required to be able to work PSK 31 or RIDI or Hellschreiber or or any of the other digital modes. Now they've done quite a bit of development on it in say the last year, and they've put in some satellite tracking functionality for those guys that like to work the birds, and it's a really cool application that, like I said, it's free. And it's out there. Just search on Ham Radio Deluxe and you'll find it, and that will pretty much tie everything in for you so that you can be able to decode the PSK31 signal that you'll see on the waterfall.
We'll be back with our guest Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with practicalpodcaster.com right after this.
Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation, and it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly, not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body. The supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous, because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the Veterans Formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take Metabolic or Veterans Formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up? Or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is tux-support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with practicalpodcaster.com.
Now, because we do typically certain things, and especially being able to set up a ham station to be able to work PSK, for instance, because sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words and a moving picture, maybe we could say, is worth 1,000,000 words. If you go out to YouTube, that's the internet video sharing site, if you will, YouTube, and search for K7AGE. Randy Hall in California has done a series of very well put together PSK 31. He takes it from being able to just basically, if all you want to do is essentially decode the signal, you can do that, and then the next is talking about either buying or building a sound card interface, what to look for, and then essentially you'll graduate after you watch the 3 or 4 different episodes in the series. You'll at the end of that, you'll know everything that you need to know about getting your own ham shack set up to be able to work PSK 31. And I recommend Randy's videos because Randy is a very patient speaker, and he does the video. He's got the real live image right there. He's pointing everything out, and it's very, very well done. And I would recommend, if you want to get into the digital modes like PSK, check out that. He's also done a very good series of satellite, being able to work the birds with a HT and a small antenna.
Okay, now let's review this just for a second, because this goes by pretty quick when you're listening, and especially if we get any fading going. His last name, Randy what now? What's his last name?
Hall, H-A-L-L.
Randy Hall. Okay, and and he is on YouTube. Do you know his call sign by any chance?
It's K7AGE.
K7AGE. And then on YouTube, if a person goes up to YouTube and they do a search, can they search on his call sign or his name and then get to these videos pretty quickly, or is there some other way you'd want to search?
You can go directly to youtube.com, that's YOUTUBE.com, and then there is a search field, and you could just type K7AGE, or you could type in your address field, like in Internet Explorer, for instance. You could type youtube.com/K7AGE, and it'll pull up his homepage.
Okay, and then all those videos are there that folks can watch.
Yes.
Yeah, and I guess my question is, do you have any idea, just ballpark-wise, for folks that are wanting to get into this, about what does Ham Radio Deluxe cost? What's the price tag on that thing? Just ballpark.
Ham Radio Deluxe is absolutely free. So, if you go out to their website, they do accept donations. And it is such an extensive application that is constantly being developed, that, you know, it's worth a few dollars, a few pounds, a few euros, whatever your currency is. If you use it, if it gives you some satisfaction in your shack, helps you out a little bit, you know, pitch a few dollars to them. But the cost is absolutely nothing. You can download it. You can install it. You can, if you've got the appropriate cables and everything for your transceiver type, you can get it up and going in 5-10 minutes.
Well, the reason I ask is you said that it was reasonably priced, so I thought maybe you want to keep a little running tab here is about what it's going to cost somebody that wants to get into the data modes. So if they have a computer and a sound card, they still need an interface of some sort, is what you're saying also.
They'll still need the sound card interface to essentially get the audio to and from the transceiver into the computer sound card. And those interfaces, depending on what they do and how many bells and whistles and switches and knobs and stuff they have on them, they will be priced at anywhere from probably $50, $60 up to, you know, $250 to $300. A very good, actually, the sound card interface that I use in my shack is a Rig Blaster Pro, and that's from West Mountain Radio. If you Google West Mountain Radio, or I think their address is westmountainradio.com, you'll find them, and they manufacture about four different types of sound card interfaces, everything from just a USB plug-and-play type model to the Rig Blaster Pro, which the reason why it's a little bit more pricey is because it does a lot of other different things. It will it'll do all the digital modes. It also encompasses some other functionality that you might find in, say, an audio keyer or something of that nature, where if you're working a contest and you're going to record, you know, two or three different audio transmissions for, you know, maybe your call, KD0BIK, CQ or whatever, you can record that. Well, you know, they make these hardware devices. Well, the Rig Blasters will emulate that with software, and you can record your WAV files, and you can use those.
Well, that's interesting. Are there other whistles and bells on the more expensive ones that, besides, say, recording the recording CW, so you have several different things in the can? You can hit your CQ button, and you can hit your whatever else that you have pre-programmed. Are there other things that they do, the more expensive interfaces? Tell us a little bit about that, because I know that's going to be a question in the minds of those that that have an interest in getting into that.
Well, like, for instance, some of the more top-of-the-line will do things such as, it will provide you master volume. It'll provide you additional inputs for headphones, microphones. It will give you the ability to more or less export wouldn't be the right word, but to be able to record your signal into, you know, you can connect another audio device to it if you wanted to record, you know, QSO, or if you wanted to record CW, for instance, for practice or something of that nature. It will give you sometimes additional headphone jacks. One of the higher end devices that this West Mountain Radio company manufactures will essentially allow you to take one sound card interface, one microphone, one pair of headphones, and essentially connect those to two different radios. So that way, you know, if you're doing different things with, you know, if you've got a say, for instance, a Yaesu 897, and you want to use that rig as your digital mode operating, and then you want to take another transceiver and do your sideband stuff or CW or whatever, you don't have to worry about plugging and unplugging headphones and microphones and whatnot. You can just basically flip a switch and it moves everything over.
That's interesting, because I can see where if a person gets into this, they really like it. You know, there's going to be other things that they're going to want to do. Now, what about, will this Rig Blaster combination of that and the Ham Radio Deluxe, can you do slow scan with it?
Yes, you can. To date, I have not transmitted slow scan, but I can certainly decode it, and I enjoy sitting back and watching that mode. It's something that I've only started doing within probably the last couple of months, but it will allow you to do slow scan television. It'll allow you to do RIDI. It'll allow you to do PSK. It will allow you to do, if you want to do digital CW, for instance, if you want to, the digital module within Ham Radio Deluxe, it's called DM780, Delta Mic 780. You can, very much like operating PSK31, you can switch over into the CW mode and, I guess, sort of cheat. You can highlight the CW on the waterfall. It will decode it for you. And if you chose to have a QSO in CW, you could type whatever it is that you want to reply back, and it would send that as traditional Morse.
That's interesting. And I guess, you know, you say cheat, but by the same token, CW is really a digital mode. I mean, it is another digital mode, like it or not. That's what it is. And what's really kind of interesting is when you were talking about your uncle not wanting a computer in the shack, I can almost hear some of the statements, and that is, why would I want to put a computer in the shack and slow me down?
Right.
Some of those fellows are, I mean, it amazes me, the guys that strap the key on their leg and go down the road doing 30 words a minute in their head mobile, you know, just amazing, you know, and very, very fascinating. Well, see, this is a whole different world to guys that have been on sideband, and if they've just got their general license and they're on HF and they're talking and they're working a little DX and whatnot. This is a whole different world. I mean, you could get lost in this in the digital modes. And I think there's also, it seems to me there's a big wide open area there for learning, you know, for learning more about different things. Cause the more you experiment, and the more you participate in these things. Now I remember, Nelson Cosby, when I was a kid, of course, this was shooting way over my head. I remember that he flipped on, I don't know what it was, it looked almost like an oscilloscope, he was picking up a slow scan television signal. And that was, you know, at that time, he couldn't get it quite right, but that was impressive to think somebody was sending a picture, you know, over the air. But, you know, years ago, and I don't know how much RITI there is out there, but I remember having an old Model 15 and a Kleinschmidt type rig that the Kleinschmidt, I think, had a tape, a perf and a tape reader. And I remember collecting these great big long strings of, I had them on the wall, you know. And they were all kind of pictures of the president, pictures of this different, you know, different people that would be sent over RITI. And I don't know if there's still any of that going on, but I remember, you know, building up a tube-type TU unit, you know. And it wasn't perfect. I remember the toroids and whatnot in it, and it, you know, most of the time it behaved, but a lot of the times it didn't. So it sounds to me like the digital modes have come so far down the pike that by the time you get something like Ham Radio Deluxe and one of these audio interfaces like the Rig Blaster or something like that, that you could just get lost, spend hours and hours in this and have all kinds of fun. Now, for folks that are not familiar with this, how do these things operate in an automatic mode? In other words, you put this thing on and it basically does its thing without you even touching it or talking to it.
Well, it'll certainly receive without a lot of interaction from the user. There's a lot of times that I'll go down into my shack, which is in my basement, and also my basement is where I have my office and just my general man cave is what I call it. And you know, I'll go down and I'll turn on the HF rig and I'll turn on my computer and I'll set up. I'll load Ham Radio Deluxe and switch over to the Digital Master 780 program, and I'll just let it set there and decode PSK31 or RITI or whatever happens to be going on the bands, and that's just sort of in automatic mode. The HF rig is receiving, no transmitting going on. It's just receiving, and then obviously to transmit, you sort of engage in a PSK31 QSO, very much like you would engage in a single sideband QSO.
We'll be back with our guest Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with practicalpodcaster.com right after this. It's the 4040. It's a new 40-meter monoband antenna. It looks just like the Adventurer or the TW2010. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installation where you gotta go stealth. 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz. Without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Just attach the feed line and you're ready to talk. That's the Trans World Adventurer 4040. Go to their website. Take a look. Transworldantennas.com.
That's transworldantennas.com. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is tux-support.com. Tux like tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation. And it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly, not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body. The supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous, because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the Veterans Formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take Metabolic or Veterans Formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with practicalpodcaster.com.
You find a spot on the waterfall that has no activity, and you listen or you watch to make sure that particular segment is available and not in use, and you send out a script that essentially a text script that is very much like saying CQ, CQ, what have you, in your call sign, and you wait for someone to come back to you. Or if you see a station calling CQ, you can highlight the waterfall, the segment where their transmission is. It'll begin decoding it, and then you can reply back. And it's a lot, you know. I think the digital modes, while none of this technology is new, I suppose the interfaces and the ability to run RDI, for instance, on a home computer, obviously is somewhat new. Although you know, folks have been doing this with Commodore 64s and some of the Apple, early Apples and such, have been in the ham shack for a number of years, but as we know it today, I think the digital modes are the possibility to really attract and interest the younger people with this, because, you know, the younger generations are so much into, you know, text messaging and email and such, and really PSK31 or RDI or any of these other digital modes is very much like having a instant message session, but it's using ham radio, it's using RF, and you're able to do this, you know, with someone in, you know, a couple of states over, a couple of hundred miles, or even several thousand miles, and in a completely different country in a different part of the world, and really working towards establishing international goodwill.
Well, let me ask you this question. Are there any frequencies, and you'll see my how much I know about it. Are there any frequencies that are used as like a calling frequency or like a net frequency where you would just park your rig there and over the period of a day or 2 days or a week or however long, you pick up messages from other guys where you're gone from the shack and they're sending you things. And then when you come in, you can go back and interact. I remember there was something like that going on even with Riddy. You'd come in and you'd see all this stuff on your machine, you know, that had been sent. And somebody would send you a message and you'd turn around later on and respond to it. And now, does that kind of thing go on with PSK31 and some of the other digital modes?
Well, within PSK31, not that I'm aware of, it's pretty much a real-time interaction. It's a real-time QSO. And as far as I know, with the way that Riddy works, for instance, with the software, I don't know of that functionality occurring. I guess the closest thing that I'm aware of that I've experimented with would be more of the traditional packet, like 2 meter VHF packet communications.
I just remember having the thing, the machine hooked up, and it was on 2 meters. I think is where we were. And I'd come home, and all of a sudden there'd be 15, 20 messages on there, and these guys would converse back and forth over a period of time, you know. But sure, you'd be sitting in the living room watching television, and all of a sudden the old Kleinschmidt would start up and start typing something, you know. And you just kind of ignore it, and then later on you go in and look at all those messages. That was kind of cool. You know, that was before IM, and that was before email, and before all these things that we had. Now that we take for granted, and it was kind of cool back then because you didn't necessarily have to be there all the time. And boy, there was some long-winded discussions that went on like that, some technical stuff. Well, let me ask you a question. You work in IT. You do yeah. IT stuff. Tell me a little bit about what you do for a living, and also how amateur radio has affected your, I guess, I see your professional career.
Okay. Well, for a living, I work in the IT field. I work for a very large database company by the name of Oracle, and I am an Oracle employee by way of a couple of mergers and acquisitions which have occurred over the last couple of years, and a lot of that takes place these days, and you just kind of have to go with the flow. I've lived here in Denver, Colorado for about 10 years, and pretty much most of my day-to-day job functions are in dealing with users' issues on their desktops or their laptops, what have you. I do work in some specialized project areas, mainly that deal with telephony. That's kind of long-standing background that I have with that. Amateur radio, I think, has affected my day-to-day life, my job career, more along the lines of some of my exposure and some of the information that I've learned through emergency communications. And I say that because one of my other job duties for the organization that I work in is in the area of planning for business continuity and disaster recovery. Now, what does that mean? Well, essentially that means, you know, having processes and procedures in place so that if we wake up tomorrow morning and we've got 3 feet of snow on the ground and no one can drive in the city and come into the office, can we still function as an organization and as a company? And so that's what I spend about 20% of my job doing. And amateur radio, with some of the exposure that I've had, and albeit within a short, you know, not quite 2 year time span, I've taken some of the ICS training courses. I've participated in CERT training here in my local area, and believe it or not, some of that information that I've seen has helped me in my planning for my job. But now, like for instance, if you ask my uncle, for instance, what amateur radio has done for him, because he was essentially licensed as a teenager, amateur radio has opened so many doors for him, whether it be with his military experience, being in the Army, being stationed in Alaska, and some of his communications roles that he did up there. His broadcast engineering experiences, all the way up to his last, what he actually he retired from civil service, working as repairing radios and such, maintaining communication systems in a military hospital. Amateur radio has opened all of those doors. So, you know, for young people today, I think amateur radio can be both a hobby. It can be something that they can have loads of fun, learn from, and actually be able to use that knowledge from a hobby to be able to better themselves in their upcoming careers.
We'll be back with our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with PracticalPodcaster.com right after this. If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is tux-support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's T-U-X-S-U-P-P-O-R-T. .com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation, and it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly, not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body. The supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous, because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the veterans formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take metabolic or veterans formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK, with practicalpodcaster.com. You know, I can draw on the fact that I have two sons that are both radio engineers. My one son, who is the oldest, David, KG4WXW. And then my other son, Matt, who is younger, KG4WXX. The call signs are pretty close together because they both took their technician at the same time. It gets a little confusing. But anyhow, you know, what's really helped is, you know, they have a visual. They know what it's like to pull an antenna up into a tree. They know what it's like to trim an antenna and get the standing wave on it, you know, completely getting the thing resonant. They know what it's like to dip the plate, you know. You know, they've had that hands-on experience. And of course, my younger son has turned into a complete Linux guru, you know, with 10 servers, you know, running out of the house. It's just, you know, it's a little bit much, but you know, like for example, the jobs that these fellows have been phenomenal when you look at what the extra knowledge and the extra hands-on experience, that practical type of thing you learn from ham radio, has taken them into a level that they wouldn't be there. The younger son is chief engineer for a fellow by the name of Dave Ramsey. I don't know if you've ever heard of Dave.
But I have.
He's a financial guru, and he runs basically a very, very conservative Christian-type advice program. He's on over 400 stations. He's got he's on Fox Television. And this has really, really made a big difference in their life as far as their workplace. My older son, David, takes care of three radio stations here in Nashville, plus he takes care of the television department at the university as far as all the engineering stuff goes. And I think that amateur radio puts you light years ahead. For some reason, there's that. Well, for example, at Ramsey Studio, they refer to Matt as MacGyver. You know, he can make anything work, you know. And I think that's where it really comes down to. If you've read enough QSTs and you fiddle around with a handbook and you've built anything, you've done anything, that is where the actual hands-on, where the rubber hits the road learning takes place. And I think that may be even true in the IT sense of it. In other words, you have a practical understanding where other folks maybe have a hypothetical understanding. I don't know if that, does that make any sense or is that?
Well, it certainly made it easier for me, I believe, when I began studying for my technician exam. But because I had also taken some, you know, some class, and you know, I don't even know if they do this today. But one of the things that that I had at least an opportunity with, and I know that back in the day of my uncle's time frame of getting started, you know, high schools we're a little more proactively sponsoring amateur radio with high school stations and such. I had a band director who was a ham, and so he would assist me in trying to not only learn the code, which was my biggest stumbling block, but in some of the theory and stuff. And believe it or not, when I began looking through the materials, and I used both the ARRL study guide and I used Gordon West's material, a lot of that information came back to me, especially related to the technician exam, because it really hasn't changed. I mean, amateur radio, the transceivers now have a lot more computer circuitry and everything in them than they did back in the day, but the theory, the operating practices, just the overall hobby effect hasn't really changed, and pretty much I remember that from my teen years. But you're right, having some experience with computers, with electronics, certainly made it easier for me.
And see, I think that this is where the value lies in this podcast that you're doing, because you have had hands-on experience. You've gone through a number of stages, obviously getting into ham radio, and what seems to be so simple to some of us is complete unknown territory to other folks. And that's regardless of age. It just depends on the stage where they're at in getting into the hobby. So now comes your practical podcast series, and this is just cool because this enables folks to go in and things. They're free. They don't cost you anything. And go at your own pace, and here Jerry kind of leads you through this thing because he's experienced some of the school of hard knocks and the learning curve and the learning process, and you can do it privately. So you're in with a group of people. You can kind of catch up on things secretly, without having to admit to your peers, "I don't know nothing about this," And I think that's really a good thing. Well, okay, give me the website address. I know it's practicalpodcaster.com, but is there anything else we need to know about getting onto your website, and is there anything else we need to know about downloading your podcasts?
Okay. You can certainly get there from practicalpodcaster.com. If you're interested primarily in the amateur radio podcast piece of it, you can certainly get there from practicalpodcaster.com, or you can also get to my amateur radio podcast via my call sign. So that's www.kilodeltazerobravoindiakilo.com/podcast to take you specifically to the amateur radio podcast. Or all of the podcasts, I've got pretty much the framework down for the next episodes of the Practical Computer Podcast, and I will make it a personal goal to get that done in the next 2 weeks and get a new episode up on the web. But you can also download all three of my podcast series through iTunes if you just search for either my name, Jerry Taylor, or if you just search for practical podcaster, they'll show up there as well.
Now, let me ask this. I want to digress just a minute or two. For folks that are wanting to get into a digital mode, and being that you're an IT guru, I'm going to pick your brain here. What operating system is going to be the best bet? I mean you hear all these things about XP versus Vista, and people say, "Oh gosh, stay away from Vista," but yet Holly here, she can make anything run in Vista. She's a former Dell tech, and it doesn't matter what it is, all the things they say won't run in Vista, she can make Vista do it. But not everybody has Holly around, KG4WXV.
Right.
So what's your recommendation? Somebody's going to get into this. What operating system do they need to be looking at? Or can you do all this in Linux?
You can do most of everything that you want to do in Linux. Where you're going to have some problems is with some of the various software applications. Now, Ham Radio Deluxe that we talked about several minutes ago, I have seen it run in Linux, but not without some issues. So I would say, just to, you know, from taking it from the practical side of probably what most everyone is going to have at home, or certainly what they're going to have experience with, and I believe going to have the best luck with, especially if they don't have a Holly right there available to them, is going to be Windows XP. Most every software application that I use, and if you really take advantage of a computer in your ham shack, you're going to do so much more than just rig control and digital modes with Ham Radio Deluxe. You're going to take advantage of rig programming software. I mean, who wants to set and program manually all of the 2 meter and 70 centimeter repeaters on a trip, which I do a couple of times a year from Denver down to near Austin, Texas, where my family lives? I go out, I cheat just a little bit. I buy the ARRL repeater guide, which is on CD-ROM. I have a computer application that will work with my Yaesu VX6, and I can just basically draw the path on the ARRL software from Denver, Colorado to Austin, Texas. Hit search, it'll find all of the 2 meter, 70 centimeter, it would find 10 meter repeaters, for instance, it'll find D-Star repeaters, it'll find all this information, and then I can upload that data into my handheld, and then that way I turn it on, I've got all the information. If I stop in Amarillo, Texas, and I want to see if I can, you know, get somebody up on a repeater there, I've got that. I've got it right there. And this, I have not ran into any software application for any of my radios or for anything that I want to do. Maybe it's WinLink, or it's packet communication or something like that that won't work with Windows XP.
Windows XP is pretty well the stable. I know the broadcast business. We've had a lot of problems with Vista. A lot of that stuff is being overcome now. I know the audio science people that make a lot of the commercial sound cards for a long time had a disclaimer on their site. It was kind of like, if you're running Vista, don't call us. You know? And I think a lot of that had to do with Microsoft being a little secretive about the code, and some of these folks couldn't write drivers. I mean, the information was not there. You know, they just couldn't write the drivers for it. So I can understand that. Of course, you have people like Holly that comes along and defies gravity, and here's a system or a piece of software that's not supposed to run in Vista, and there it is running perfectly in Vista. So, sure. You know, but for the average guy in the ham shack, most everything they're going to do is going to be usable in XP. You know, Linux can be a little difficult. I mean, where would we be without Linux? I mean, we'd be without probably three-fourths of the Internet.
Right.
You know, because Google is nothing but a great big gigantic Linux cluster. But I think from a practical standpoint, especially if you're just starting out and you want to do it, and a lot of fellows maybe want to do this on their notebooks. You know, they've got the notebook with them. This is a good thing. Well, listen, we're out of time, but I really appreciate you joining us. Once again, it's practicalpodcaster.com. Practicalpodcaster.com. Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK. And you're on iTunes, so there's no problem there. They can set up a click on an RSS feed, and Practical Podcaster, all of his podcasts, if you select them, will download straight into your iPod or your Zune or whatever you got, and you can take it with you as you go, you know, and you can learn, and you can and listen to all of Jerry's personal hands-on experience as he explains things in basic form, and it sounds like I really commend you for this. I think this is a great thing, and I encourage folks to go to your site and check it out. So thank you much for joining us. You'll have to come back again, and I'm sure you'll have something brewing a few months down the road that'll be new that you'll want to talk about, and we want to have you back.
All right. Well, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come on your show and share my information with you and your listeners. And I do invite everyone to check out the website and listen to the podcast. And I will certainly be more than happy to come back and speak with you sometime in the near future. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's going to do it for this week's QSO. Thanks to our guest, Jerry Taylor, KD0BIK with PracticalPodcaster.com. Tune in next week for another QSO right here. Same time, same station, and thank you for listening.